it's all very well saying we need to respond to the context, but how do we find out about the context we live in? And so just a few thoughts on this one. One of the ways we can find out about the area we live in is talk to people. That's an obvious one, isn't it? But sometimes the perceptions are not the reality. So another way would be to conduct or commission a survey and actually find out from people that are in that area. Always be careful with statistics. Always be careful with surveys. It's much better if it confirms what you suspected. If it's throwing up some very strange things that you never experienced in your area, go check them out. There are ways of checking out if the statistics are borne true. Could even happen, especially as time goes on between the censuses, that things have changed in your area in the last 3 years, which may not be reflected in the census statistics. Local libraries are a good source of information, still, as ex-librarians like Dory will tell us. They are still places where, even if they don't have the information there in the building, they'll be able to point in the direction of local information. Our local voluntary action group, the Reading Voluntary Action, it's called RVA for short, you can see why. But they are a fantastic source and a platform for all charitable groups, not just faith groups, but all voluntary groups. And they give advice on fundraising, they give advice on the local area, they'll give advice on networking. I've been to a couple of training sessions with them about social media and how we access social media. But you can do it very simply online. And this is a website that I've found recently. Up My Street, it used to be called, but they've renamed it to Find a Hood. Not Find a Hoodie, Find a Hood. Now, you'll say, well, what is that going to tell me about the area I live in? So I think we can go live, if I press the right button this time, to the website. And I need to move that across. And you'll be able to see it as well. Okay. The downside is you get adverts. So ignore the L'Oreal, that's not for you. I was searching earlier for this area, DE53, this is the Alfreton area, and immediately I can tell you that in this area, property prices on average, are significantly less than in East Midlands average, and across England and Wales they're significantly less again. I can tell you what the crime statistics are like. I can tell you about the age profile of people living here. There are more aged 45 to 59 and 60 plus than the national average. There's less children in this area than the national average. I can tell you that the number of couples with children is 3% less than the national average. I can tell you the religions in this area. There are very few people of other faiths. There are less than the average number of Hindus in the country, or Jewish, or Muslim, or Sikh. Let's just compare that. Would anyone like to shout out their postcode and we'll have a comparison?
RG14.
RG14.
1TX.
1-4 like that, yes?
Yeah.
1TX.
1TX. Thank you,
there we go. Which is the Newbury area.
Yep.
Oh. That is a noise. Okay, is it still going to be there? We interrupt this program. Wonderful. Right, okay, we're going to have to go again.
Wiggly, wiggly,
a Wiggly Waggly Worm. That's a song title. It's an excellent song. RG14, there it is, 1TX. Okay, let's see what's different in Newbury. Is thinking. Yeah,
it's thinking.
It's thinking. Oh, there we go. There we go. Northcroft is the area in West Berkshire, in the southeast of England. And here, slightly different, isn't it? The average price, 315,000, is 17,000 more than the southeast average. Is that right?
Yeah.
Which again is higher than the national average for England and Wales. If we go, you guessed that Portchain was from the posh end. But interestingly, in Ted's area, yes, there are more people 60 plus, but there's quite significantly less under 17s and student age 18 to 29. So it might be that in that area there's more demand for over 60s drop-in than in some other areas. So we'll look at religions and see if that's any different. Now, again, you've got a small proportion above average by 2% number of Christians in the area. Just want to give you a contrast with where Park United Reformed Church is situated in Reading, RG61DN. When it comes to... Yeah, it's gone.
It's too slow.
We're used to faster broadband. Our religious makeup is significantly different. You'll see 17% of the people living in the area around Park Church are from a Muslim background. That's 15% higher than the national average. Local average. And the Hindu population is 9% higher than the Southeast average. Not surprising, as I've said to you. Now, that is not a surprise to me. We know that there's a couple of mosques, there's only one temple, there's a Hindu temple, and there's two Sikh gurdwaras. So I'm surprised that Sikh numbers are less, but that probably means they're in a different part of the region.
If that one popular road opened
out... I believe it is, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah, that's the new mosque in... Yeah. It's a very big one.
That's been taken years to build.
No, it's been open quite a long time, yeah.
What's interesting is you've also got occupations. There's a high level of people who are professionals in the area around the church. Age profile is a significant one as well. For us, around the church, we've got 16% less than the local average for 60 pluses. Why is that? Because we've got 34% 18 to 29. So it's student accommodation around the immediate area of the church is significant. It would make no sense to reach out to students if your church is miles from any university. But because a lot of our terraced housing around the church has been converted to a multiple occupancy student lets, then it makes sense to have provision for young people. So I hope that's helpful. That's one of the questions that came up in our area of how do you find out about the context in which you live. I think you read that now. So it was find a hood, not find a hoodie, find a hood. Well, several people need to find a hoodie because it was so cold. Let's see if I can get back to the presentation.
If I could add, it wouldn't be difficult to find a hoodie in part three.
So there are various ways of finding out the context in which we live, because the context in which we live will affect the way we do our mission. Our missiology has to be in response to the community in which we are. Okay. But we said, there are no single recipe for growth, there are no simple solutions to decline. The road to growth depends on the context. What works in one place may not work in another. What seems crucial is that congregations are constantly engaged in reflection. Churches cannot soar on autopilot. So at this point, I will stop talking and see what questions you have for me, if there are any. start over with Brenda.
A comment first, having seen what you said about context. It's looking for opportunities as well, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Making links with people in the local neighbourhood, being willing to change how we do things.
Absolutely.
But the question, I can remember Bible Society, church growth hacks and lectures and things. I think most of what we've shared, not all, but most of it, has been to do with numbers. Yeah. More people in our churches. But I seem to remember that the Bible Society church growth was also about growth in fellowship,
yes,
deepening faith, and there may have been others, but that's what sticks in my mind. So I don't know, you know, if you've got any comments.
Yes,
that.
I'm very happy to respond to that. I think that there was a time when I only heard the words growth talked about in terms of deepening fellowship and increased commitment and so on, because people were afraid to talk about numbers. It's not about bums on pews. Well, that's true to an extent. But I suspect some of it was because we were so afraid of looking at statistics and going, actually, the numbers are falling. I think we're now in a place where we can honestly say it is about people. It is about the number of people. If there is nobody going to church, I think we've missed that somewhere on the Great Commission. You know? We can have the most wonderful community centres. We can have the most wonderful premises. We can have huge bank balances. But if there's nobody attending worship, and there's nobody growing in faith, then actually we haven't achieved what the church should be achieving, which is the nurturing and the discipling. So yes, I make no apology for talking about numbers. I make no apology for drawing attention to reports about numbers of people. It's the numbers are both the numbers of members, but also those attending worship. Because it's Anglican, they record those kind of things. We're not so good at recording things, and you are seeing But Anglicans record everything, including how many people were there at the service. Is that right, David?
Absolutely right.
I've preached once, only once, where the vicar told me I had to go and sign a book, and they had to record exactly how many people were present at the service. And so that you have that record.
Oh, not half, and you can tell who was there in 1832, 1878, and you can only use a specific kind of ink.
Oh, because it has to be the long-lasting stuff that won't
exactly
disappear.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's why we've talked about numbers. But I don't for 1 minute pretend that growth is only about numbers. It is about having a deeper understanding of the Bible. It is about growing in fellowship and supporting one another pastorally. It's about all of those things. When I've been talking about numbers, that's a deliberate thing, but it's not to say that's the only aspect in which churches grow. Gay, and then Ted.
I haven't been attending your classes, so I don't know if this has come up, but it did occur to me that sometimes a building can cause barriers because so much concentration has to be gone on. I know we've got a very good development project going on and a good reason for it.
Yeah.
But sometimes people's energies are so geared up with maintenance and keeping a building going because they've got to look after it.
Absolutely. Buildings, blessing or a curse. In some ways, our buildings are blocking our mission. Because we spend so much time raising money to keep the building going, but we don't spend money on nurturing disciples, we don't spend money, we don't have money for employing youth workers or lay workers to help with pastoral care or anything, because we're spending all our money on buildings. So yes, buildings can be a real curse. And they can also put us in the wrong place. You know, there are the number of people that hold on to a building which is in a place where there's no longer a community because they've all moved to the nearest new town or new development. You know, that happens, and that's you know, one of the realities. And we're particularly recognising the history of the Anglican Church, where there's had buildings in place for 200 or 300 years. Often they're in these little tiny villages. They'll seat 400, but there's only actually 20 people living in the village. You know, it's ridiculous. But they can't do anything because they can't sell the buildings because they're consecrated ground. But we don't have that problem, but we do have buildings which are in the wrong place. And it stops us from planting new buildings in new places because we're holding on to buildings in old places. Yes.
I did just want to say something else. Do think the house groups are very valuable for people getting to know each other in a more deeper way. Yeah. You know, that you don't have it just on a normal Sunday. And that for some good news stories, I can recommend, as you mentioned about Beau this morning, the Reform magazine is really very good. And also the welcome booklets for new people in the area, which I know we do put a bit in, don't we?
Yes, if there are welcome packs for new people moving into your neighbourhood, it's a good thing to get a leaflet into those. We do a one ecumenically that goes in with details of all the local churches. So, yes, thank you for that. Yeah, nurturing. We spent a whole day on nurturing. We nurture our individual members. We nurture our elders and deacons. We nurture our ministers because we want everyone to grow. And small groups are definitely part of the secret to that. Yeah. Yes.
Looking to the future, with the numbers dropping and the new television programme that's coming out with an internet where you can actually pick up a recording of a church service on a Sunday, do you think that's going to affect the churches a lot? I'm thinking 10, 15 years in a row.
Yeah. No, I think we're already seeing that. Those people that tune into the God Channel, and there are various God Channels, but there are lots of people that are accessing those. I also think you're right, there's going to be more and more people accessing spiritual resources online, and that's going to have a major effect. And the question is, are we going to be able to keep up with that? Are we going to engage with those platforms, or are we going to not have the resources to do it? And who can tell? What I do believe is that God has a plan, and that God's church will always be around. It may look completely different in 10, 15 years' time. None of us can really predict it.
Why I ask is because Sophie is Storm away are all on that system now anyway, because we're so far apart. We're not too bad in South Tewist, but in Storm away and Mull and all that, it's such a distance. They haven't got churches on the island.
No.
And it's all recorded from Inverness or Glasgow.
Thank you. Yeah, so I mean, that's, you, in a sense, you've answered your own question, because it's already happening in places where they have to connect online. Any other questions? Yes, from the back.
Hi, the question I have is kind of the opposite of what the lady just said not too long ago about a building. What about in the absence of a building?
Sure.
So just say if you're actually renting a hall or something like that, how does that impact on... how's that impact on attendees and church growth?
And mission. Let's face it, the reason I was responding to the question about buildings in that way was because we are an established church and we've got a huge number of buildings. Some of them aren't being used fully. But I also recognise the opposite. I see Network Vineyard in our area have just bought their own place after 20 years of renting. Why have they done that? Because they've seen the difference it makes in terms of mission. You know, if you want to run a youth club, if you want somewhere to meet for a prayer meeting, and you're hiring a leisure centre that's available Sunday, it's probably not available on a Wednesday evening when you're looking for a prayer meeting. So, yeah, you then have to be creative, don't you? And either use other community centres, other church buildings, other homes. You know, it's a good thing to meet in people's homes as well. So, buildings, just recognise, buildings can be a blessing and can enable mission. They can also be a curse. If they're in the wrong place or in the wrong condition, it's a huge investment of time, and ultimately time and energy and money from a congregation. So, yeah, by all means, go for a building. I wouldn't say that a building is always negative, but just recognise, you know, if you're struggling to pay the rent, and somebody else is looking after the building when you're paying rent, but if you're struggling to pay the rent, then you probably wouldn't be able to afford to maintain that building yourselves. So it's swings and roundabouts. Yeah, so it doesn't really answer your question, but it recognises there are good things about buildings. So, question
I think it goes back to context, doesn't it? And trying to work out what works for you, where you are. And whilst I wouldn't want to promote Costa generally, most of the Costa coffees in this country have a remit saying that if a church wants to use it for a meeting, then they should open up for that church to use their facilities for a meeting. That can be expensive because the coffee's expensive, but I know a local church where I was in Christchurch that did just that. They went and hired it out, I think, every Monday night, and had a meeting in there on a Monday evening, and used it. And I think it was literally that as long as they bought coffee, they were quite happy.
Certainly we know of fellowships where they're trying to engage with a different group of people, maybe people that aren't familiar with church buildings or aren't comfortable in church buildings, that have made arrangements in post. Yeah, you can hire a function room, or depending on the community, you can take over the entire pub and have an opportunity for discussion and worship in a very different setting. It doesn't work for everyone, but for some people it does.
Can I just ask, have you any advice for a downtown church where there aren't lots of people living around you? What is our sort of mission to be? We're a church with a very proud history, but we are now down to, you know, sort of quite a small number of workers in the church.
Yeah.
What do we do in a city centre situation? And it's not really in the shopping area, we're in the historic area.
Right, okay. It's very much a question of looking at your context and saying, well, what is it that we can offer in this area? So if you're in a historic building, for example, in a historic part of the town, it could be that you could tap into that whole area of heritage, which is tremendous. You know, it's a growth area where people are looking to look round old buildings and come and visit and experience worship in an old building, for example. Now, that might be nothing to do with what you can offer. So I think really it's impossible for me to say without coming to see the context, to see what surrounds you. So, and I think that's your role really, is to go back and say, what is it that is a need in this particular area? You know, if everybody has moved out from the city and nobody actually, or in this part of the town, the city where we are, if everybody goes home at 5 o'clock, then maybe all your activities have to be between 9 and 5. And you actually reach out to the workers that are coming in to work in the town during that period. So you might offer a lunchtime Bible study or a lunchtime worship slot. That would be something that would be relevant to the group that are coming in. That might not work either. So it really depends on your context. You've got to know who are the people living around, what are the needs. You know, it's no good running a parent-toddler group if all the people living around are students who don't have any children, for example.
I mean, taking back from Wendy's there, I do feel that, just personal, that perhaps a prayer group where you just meet, actually not trying to get people in, yeah, although if they came that would be fine, but you actually focused on prayer and regular prayer, then the answer might come through that
sure
way.
Yep. I mean, we've mentioned it several times. The value of prayer and just meeting to pray for those opportunities, to pray for growth, to pray for the opportunities to emerge and the people to come forward.
I'm old enough to remember a radio character called Arthur Fallowfield, and he had a catchphrase. So every question he was asked, the answer began, "I think the answer lies in the soil." And I think it lies in the soil for us as well.
In the context, yes.
And it lies in the encouragement of those who are part of the Christian community to go on exploring in all sorts of directions.
Yeah.
both within the church itself and beyond it. Not for nothing did Jeremiah say, go to the door of the temple and there proclaim the word of the Lord. And so often we tend to be not of missio, which is a sending out, but a shutting in.
Yeah.
And God in a box has never worked. And it's how we get that kind of encouragement within our Christian community so that everybody feels that they are part of this exercise. Because so many people are great at complaining that things need doing and complaining that other people aren't doing them.
Yes.
And it is very much in our court to be able to come to terms to things like that. Learning is a critical part of growing. Unfortunately, we often tend to forget that part of the equation.
Yeah. But hopefully we've re-emphasised that time over the week. The responsibility is ours to be involved. Some of you within the United Reformed Church will recognise this logo, Vision 2020. And it was a framework for mission, which was created a couple of years ago, I assume 2010. It was a 10-year plan. So this has been around since 2010. But number 7 statement says this: in 10 years' time, we will be a growing church with an increasing membership. Well, we're in 2014, so we need to start working harder, I think, to be a church that's growing in its membership. And that meant figures. That's real numbers, not just growing in other ways. Just a reminder again of the outcomes from that report, anecdote to evidence. Good leadership, clear mission and purpose, a willingness to self-reflect, change and adapt, the involvement of all people, being intentional in prioritising growth, and being intentional in the chosen style of worship, and nurturing disciples are the key ingredients associated with churches growing. Churches of any size, place or context. So if you take nothing else away, please take those things, and please take the reality that church growth is a possibility. There's no guarantees, but it is possible that the church will grow. Thank you so much for your interest. Thank you again for the invitation to come and address you. It has been an interesting and special experience. Somewhere I've got a slide that will say, thank you. And God bless you as you all return to your fellowships. And thank you to our visitors as well. God bless you as you return to Enfield and the mission field that's there. Bless you all.